This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Audible.com has over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. To start your trial today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans not affiliated with a major network. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by Marcus Money Vanderberg and Alfred Big Nasty Cunnell, a.k.a. Richie Incognito. What's going on, fellas?
What's up, Nate?
What's up, Nate?
Not much. Feeling good this week. It's a lot of things, a lot of news stories that popped off in the world of sports. I've been looking forward to this week's show. But before we get to that, how did you guys spend your week? I know last time we talked, it was right before Halloween. So any big stories? And I'm looking at you, Alfred.
You know what? It's a little bit of a letdown. I didn't really go out on Halloween night on Thursday. I'd gone out so much on the weekend before. Had fun in San Diego. Dressed as Gerald from Hey Arnold. And then a brother, Black and Asian. Dennis Black and Asian would love my Saturday costume because I was Geordie LaForge. So Hopefully pictures of that. I had myself a good time.
Why don't we have those pictures on our website right now?
They are camera pictures, not cell phone pictures. So they have to, you got to wait through that process until
camera uploaded.
Yeah, I know. Who carries cameras anymore?
You know, you could have done like some totally meta costume though, because you were Geordie LaForge, who was played by LeVar Burton,
right?
And you're African.
Oh God, I know where you're going.
LeVar Burton played Kunta Kinte, so you could have done like a Commander Geordie LaForge Kunta Kinte mashup.
I don't know if that would have translated immediately, and the explanation might have gotten a little bit hairy there.
I mean, it wouldn't be the worst costume we've seen with all these, the black face and the
Trayvon Martin and the Twin Towers and the Boston Marathon.
Yeah.
Stay classy, people.
Horrible. Horrible America.
Yeah, horrible. But let's talk about something that wasn't horrible. Well, we don't usually kick off the show with MMA, but we talked about the Bellator card last week, and I don't think any of us were really that hyped on it, but I got to say, I watched it. And for the most part, it was boring like we expected. But that main event, I know Marcus disagrees with me, but I think Chandler Alvarez, to me, that was the fight of the year. What did you think about the card, Big Nasty?
Well, again, I'm not going to say fight of the year because we talked about this in the Facebook group during the Cain Velasquez fight. That it was Diego Sanchez, that his fight against Joe Rogan nutted his pants, said it was the greatest fight of all time. But I wouldn't say that. But that was a hell of a fight, and I'll give that the fight of the year. I don't think that's going to be top. But yeah, if it wasn't for that, I would say the Eddie Alvarez-Chandler fight was very good. And it was a war. It went five rounds. I'm a little disappointed in aspects of how it ended, and I wish it would have been a more definitive finish. But I had a very good time watching it. I think it definitely overachieved, and I was expecting a very good fight to begin with.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with the decision. I thought it could have gone either way. I'm glad Alvarez was able to get that win, and I look forward to the trilogy, which should, be on revenue, should be inking up that contract as we speak. But perhaps even bigger for Bellator, Marcus, was the TV numbers.
Yeah, the TV numbers were solid. It did 1.1 million, I believe, 1.1 or 1.2.
Yeah.
Solid numbers for a Saturday night. Much better than doing the pay-per-view route, but I'm going to guess they still ended up losing money because they probably had to, some obligations to the pay-per-view companies, and they were doing advertising for that stuff, so it's probably a wash for them. But you know, it overall the card sucked, and it sucked. B, it was 4 hours long almost. And if this is your first time really diving into Bellator, you know, you're taking what you're watching away from that show, saying, okay, this company is a two fighter company in Alvarez and Chandler. And besides that, there was really nothing that really stood out. King Mo, I was expecting a little bit more. And to sit through, 25 minutes of King Mo? Just too much. And just imagine if we had the Ortiz fight on there. What would have happened if you had that great match with Alvarez and Chandler, and then you had the main event, quote-unquote, with Tito and Rampage? Like, how would that go over with the fans and with the viewing audience? So it was a blessing in disguise that it didn't work out. Hopefully, if there is a rematch between or a trilogy between those two fighters, that they don't attach it to a fight involving Tito Ortiz or anyone else who's old and washed up. Just let them headline the card like this past card and go from there. But, you know, unfortunately, it's already looking like Alvarez is on his way out after this next fight. So, unfortunately for Bellator, this might be, you know, the high point for them, and who knows what happens down the line.
This is the kind of fight where if you wanted to have, you know, that entree to your product, that would be the fight. Losing Alvarez would be a crucial blow for this organization, but I do think that there is value, and they need to milk this for as much as they can, Alfred, because it's kind of like, if you want to use the TNA analogy, the Chandler Alvarez fights have kind of been like their AJ Styles Samoa.
Well, yeah, and that's a great analogy that you just use, and that would be aesthetically pleasing, but remember, that is going to appeal to a more hardcore audience. And the mainstream audience, the people who Bellator is eventually going to need to survive, they needed guys like Muhammad Lawal to win. King Mo needed to win, but he's lost for the second time to Emmanuel Newton, who is not an elite fighter, but he's a fighter. He's a solid fighter. I think he won like 3 straight going into this, and now he's against King Mo, who really isn't. He's very rough around the edges, very marketable, but his game is all power. He's a poor man's Rampage Jackson. And a fighter like Emmanuel Newton, it's not a fluke. A guy who is just a classically trained fighter, doesn't have to be an elite, has exposed somebody like King Mo. And so that's where they're going to have a huge problem, because now you have to go back to the well and create another casual fan, mainstream star, and that's going to be very difficult for them.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where they go from here, unless they can find a boatload of money to keep Eddie Alvarez around. You know, I don't think the idea of bringing in guys like King Mo and bringing in guys who have been let go from the UFC will be enough for them to survive. They need to build and develop and ultimately keep their young stars like Alvarez and Chandler. So we'll see where it goes from here, but it was a good number on Saturday night for them in terms of ratings.
Yeah, and I think Alvarez is definitely worth the money. If for nothing else, then, you know, you can keep these two apart for a while, and assuming that Chandler is still either the best or the second best guy in your company, that he would not lose any fights in the interim. You could have the story of these two guys, you know, you got Alvarez defending and Chandler trying to get back to where he was, and it's an easy story to tell. You know, it's simple booking.
If you're Alvarez, what are you waiting for? Just let's get this fight planned, because the faster you get this fight done, you can get the hell out of there. So,
yeah,
that'll be the next fight, is how long will Bellator try to stretch this thing out before Alvarez says, all right, enough is enough, let's book this fight.
We're going to see how good Bjorn Rebney really is, because to me, if I'm Bjorn, I'm trying to keep this dude, you know, like, what's that old Supreme song? You keep me hanging on. I'm keeping this dude, stringing him along for as long as I can, because he and Chandler are the golden goose, or the golden gooses, golden geese. And, you know, I want to keep those guys under the tent of Bellator as long as I can. We'll switch topics. We'll do a quick roundup of the NFL. I know Marcus was happy because Nick Foles looked like a juggernaut against the world-beating Oakland Raiders. I know Big Nasty was probably crying in his beer at the thought of spending the next 4 weeks with Seneca as his starting quarterback. And, you know, there's been a lot to talk about besides the obvious Richie Incognito story down in Miami, and we're going to save that for segment two. But what kind of stories in terms of this past week in the NFL as we hit the halfway point, what caught your interest, Marcus?
Of course, Nick Foles caught my interest after I ripped the man the week before for his, or 2 weeks ago for his outing against Dallas. But I did hint, I said maybe he wasn't healthy. He looked healthy last week against Oakland. 7 touchdowns, tying the NFL record for most touchdowns in a game that Peyton Manning set in week one or tied in week one. It looks like he's the starter for now, question mark. You never know the Eagles, never know Chip Kelly, but I think that, you know, Foles has done enough for the time being in terms of holding that job. You know, we're talking about a guy who threw more touchdown passes in that game last Sunday than Mike Vick has all season. And the key number, he's at no interceptions this season. Yeah, he played like shit against Dallas, but he didn't turn the ball over, which is something that Mike Vick struggles with in terms of turnovers. So we'll see where he goes. He did Green Bay in the battle of backup quarterbacks this week, which would be interesting. And he's better than Senator Wallace. So I'm curious to see what happens with Nick Foles for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I agree. I think if anything, like Mike Wilbon said, for the Eagles to be successful, you're going to need both Foles and Vic for the remainder of the season because neither one of them is going to be able to stay healthy for the remainder. So I think if Foles is playing with the hot hand right now, you definitely want to keep him in there and allow Vic to heal because there's going to come a point in time in the season where you need him, especially if you're still in contention in that weak division. But like we said, Alfred, what's going on with your boy?
I'll get to my boy in 1 second, but while I have defended Nick Foles on this show as being the better quarterback and the better option between him and Michael Vick, let's not act like this is Nick Foles, the second coming of Joe Montana. He's just played this world-beating game because this was more about the Oakland Raiders defense letting those wide receivers run, I mean free through that secondary. Michael Vick on a bad hamstring, I think, could have had the same game. You're talking about Nick Foles just throwing it up and having wide receivers having college-level separation. This was an Aaron Rodgers, who I will get to, throwing a back-shoulder throw in a tight window, ran on the numbers to a receiver, vintage performance. This was like Johnny Manziel against UTEP, where he just has guys running open, and sometimes he'll just throw a hitch, and they'll just take it the rest of the way. And Nick Foles, statistically, had what we can consider the greatest start of all time because no other quarterback has thrown 7 touchdowns and had a perfect quarterback rating. So that, in a sense, is even better than Peyton Manning's start that we saw in week one. But that's not enough to convince me, and it's obviously not enough to convince Chip Kelly that he even has a starter because when I asked him afterwards, like, well, got your starter now, I said no. He knows that Nick Foles needs to do more against tougher defenses and tighter coverage in order to be solidified. And as far as Aaron Rodgers, it's sad, and a lot of people are getting on the Packers because they're not going after Matt Flynn, who's proven to be a system quarterback. Didn't work out in Oakland, didn't work out in Seattle, and he has been a world beater in the Green Bay Packers offense. But I think, just like Mike McCarthy and Ted Thompson and the Packers organization may think, that he's just shot and he's mentally just not able to perform based on the trauma he's gone through of having all these ethnic quarterback steals job, and now he's going to compete with Seneca Wallace. We've seen this movie before. So let's just let Seneca Wallace do his job. Hopefully they can. I don't even know if Aaron Rodgers is going to come back if it's a 4 to 6 week injury. Hopefully we'll still be competitive if we could just run the ball. We've got a manageable schedule. I don't know. Maybe a 2-2 record and Aaron Rodgers coming back would give the Packers a chance, but I'm not holding out hope.
If going to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, I mean, if you're going to get hurt, this is probably the best time in terms of their schedule. It's pretty easy for them.
Yeah.
Philadelphia, New York Giants, Minnesota, Detroit on Thanksgiving, which will be probably a loss. Atlanta, and then if they get him back by Dallas December 15th, I think they're in good shape. I'm just bummed for Thanksgiving. I mean, I was looking forward to seeing Aaron Rodgers out there against Matthew Stafford, but, you know, I think that's the one game that they'll be really exposed offensively, but the rest of these games, I don't see why they can't compete and or win.
Especially with the emergence of the running game, which is something that was kind of absent for the first couple of weeks of the season, but now you got Eddie Lacy and a resurgent James Starks, who is looking like he did back in those Buffalo days under Turner Gill. So I think that's going to take a lot of the pressure off of Seneca Wallace, who he's not great, but
no, he's terrible. Let's not sugarcoat because he's black. He's terrible.
Okay, as bad as he did look on Monday night, you got to consider the circumstances of him being thrown in the fire as opposed to him having one entire week with the starting offense to prepare for another team. I remember when Jeff Garcia took over for Donovan McNabb, when Donovan McNabb was in MVP format. This was about 2006, I believe, and the first week he came back against the Colts on Sunday night, looked awful, and everybody wrote Eagle off for dead. But Jeff Garcia got some reps. He got some time with that first team offense, and they rolled their way into the playoffs and were red hot. Won the playoff game that year.
Whatever helps you sleep at night, Alfred. Keep pumping yourself up.
That does help me
about Senator Wallace.
I can't spin it out of the way. And Jeff Garcia was, a lot of people would consider him washed up at that point, but that was his last run, and hopefully this could be Seneca Wallace's last gas. He's in a good organization. Let's not act like this is happening.
Has Wallace ever gotten the first gas?
He's been around for a while. I think he's had like 50 starts. He's with the Seahawks. He's with the Browns. He's got some level of talent.
Some, yeah, sure, I guess. But, yeah, he's got the starts. He's got the experience under his belt. It's just, you know, instead of been Vince Young, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, somewhere Vince Young is in Texas or wherever he lives, and he's just shaking his head, wondering about the mistakes and the choices he made in his life.
And that's what kind of hurts, is that you look back on that, and I remember when they cut Vince Young, the Packers just kind of took the air for that and said, blame us, it's Vince played well. He was a good citizen. He didn't do anything wrong. It was just a matter. It was almost like they're reconfiguring a fantasy roster. Like, well, my quarterback has a bye week, so I just got to drop this guy. So Vince Young really should be on this roster playing quarterback. And I think this could be one of those feel good stories of Vince Young leading the Packers back to their Super Bowl years.
And the funny thing is, didn't they pick Seneca up primarily because they were playing, was it the 49ers or the Seahawks, where he was a backup? But I would like to say, though, just for the complete irony of it all, I would have loved if your boy made a call down to Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
Don't even start that.
Well, there's an old gunslinger riding the tractor right now.
You know what? If all Brett Favre...
Honestly, right now,
at this point, would you hand the ball off?
Would you rather have Seneca Wallace or Brett Favre? Just honestly.
Seneca Wallace. In a heartbeat. Have you seen Brett Favre? The last time we saw Brett Favre, he could barely stand up. I don't want to see Brett Favre in that form, not for the Packers. You know, I took solace in the fact that he was a Viking.
That Wrangler commercial, though, he got some zip on that ball.
That's CGI. he was probably throwing a softball, and they CGI'd it to make it look like it was a football.
Industrial lights and magic.
Yeah. I think, Nate, real quick, I think what you're talking about is that a story on Pro Football Talk from earlier this season in August is Seneca Wallace said the 49ers used me to get Colt McCoy to take a pay cut. So that, I mean, that's a similar story to maybe what you're talking about.
He was with the Niners, right? In the preseason?
They signed him in the preseason, yes. Oh,
okay. And then so he went from the Niners to the Packers, because I remember distinctly hearing that the reason that they signed Seneca was because they could pick his brain or whatever little morsels he happened to pick up in the preseason with the 49ers.
Okay, I can see that. And the Niners were their week one opponent. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was that was the week after they had cut Vince Young.
Right.
So, you know, and then Vince Young, for all intents and purposes, Vince Young should be in the NFL. And he should be the starting quarterback for the Packers right now. But if wishes were fishes, the world would be an ocean. But I know there's something that you guys have been wishing for the last couple of weeks, and we've kind of been lax in bringing it to you. So without any further ado, it's the return. And I'm not going to cut you off this time, Marcus, I promise. Mm-hmm. It's the return. Like, trust me, this is, you know.
Two-minute minor for your actions last week.
This is like Flair's thing. I'm holding out my hand. Shake my hand, brother. It's the return of Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro.
Thank you. So I had a story all lined up, ready to go. Send it to you guys for your approval. And it involves Ray Emery laying hands on Washington Capitals goalie, but there's a bigger story out of last night's Chicago Blackhawks game. If you haven't seen this play, you should YouTube it. Winnipeg played Chicago last night, and Adam Parody of the Winnipeg Jets took a hit from a Chicago Blackhawks defender so hard that he literally went through the plexiglass into the stands. This is not something you see very often in the NHL. They've done a good job of sort of, you know, making sure the plexiglass is pretty sturdy to protect the fans and to protect the players itself. But that wasn't bad enough. The guy, you know, the plexiglass goes in. You know, the guy is halfway in the stands. A Chicago Blackhawks fan takes the dude's helmet and puts it on his head. He keeps the helmet. it's one of those bizarre hockey moments that tends to happen now. It happens every year. And check it out. Also, the Ray Emery fight. Don't look that up. Ray Emery. He's one of the few, might be the only black goalie left in the league currently. But he is someone you don't want to mess with. This guy literally came down to the other end of the ice while the rest of the team were fighting against each other and just attacked the goalie. The goalie wanted no part of the fight, but, you know, hockey. Dude wants to fight, you got to fight. So he's nicknamed Razor for a reason. So look those two plays up and... That's your hockey minute.
Nicely done. Most exciting minute in all of sports and entertainment.
Yeah. It was worth the 3-week wait.
Did you hit it right on the head, Marcus? That was a minute?
I should have timed myself. But I was going to say, besides that, I mean, hockey regular season is probably the worst out of the four. So you won't hear a lot out of me about hockey until April. So.
and for anybody at home actually timing it, like our hockey minute is kind of like when Tosh puts the time on the clock to tell jokes. He runs out of time when he runs out of jokes, and you run out of time for the hockey minute when Marcus runs out of hockey stuff to talk about. There's a clear correlation between the two. So that's going to do it for the A Block, and I'm very excited about what we got on today's show, gentlemen. Not only are we going to break down the Richie Incognito story coming up in segment two, we got issues, but we got a special guest that's going to hop on and break it down with us. Not only are we going to talk about TNA and their management issues in the ringside rep, but this is a great day in Kings of Sport history because it's another week that Alfred and I get to talk about our favorite subject on this program, and that is cocaine.
Yes!
Yes! And Mark, this is a story that's so big, Marcus can't even keep us from talking about it. So we gonna
not
have
just
some
any cocaine, it's crack cocaine.
It's crack cocaine. Yes, we have some cracky tales to talk about today in segment four. And Marcus will be joining us for that conversation.
Sorry, Canada. I still love you.
So stick and stay. We got all that and more things to sport right after this.
I hate married people, man. Whenever I go out with other married couples, I like to bring along a single crackhead. Just to spice up the activity. Come on, tell us some of your cracky tales, please.
Era's coming. From Eli and Peyton to Rondé and Tiki, DJ and Justin, Cal and Billy, and even Brett and Owen, brothers have always made the world of sports and entertainment a little more exciting. We'll enter three new brothers on the scene who are changing the game one show at a time. It's the Kings of Sport, thekingsofsport.com.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, thekingsofsport.com.
For all you black folks out there,
and we are back from the Kings of Sports, the show that is more exciting than being in the passenger seat while Yasiel Puig drives you down a Tennessee highway. Shout out to your boy Marcus.
Old news. Keep it moving.
Okay. Well, we are going to keep it moving with some current news. Y'all noticed that we did not talk about the big news of the week, the Richie Incognito story in segment one, because you know, we felt that we wanted to give it some more time to get more in depth with the story. And so we had to bring it to segment two, and a segment we call We Got Issues, where we break down the hottest topic of the day and not just regurgitate what everybody else is saying, but we also want to spin the story forward. And for a story this big, you know, we had to call in for some reinforcements, call in for some backup. And joining us at this time is the founder and the CEO of the BDSIR Network, where he oversees a stable of programs that cover a wide variety of topics. He's the host of the Hour of Power in Sports show, where he brings the barbershop to the radio, and he is down with the Kings. Please welcome to the show our brother, Mike Knox. What's good, Mike?
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Definitely, we've been. This is the good Mike Knox for anyone out there that's like, that don't sound like Mexi.
Not the 6'9" white guy with a beard that you Mark boys out there hit me on Twitter and say, is that you? Look at my pictures. Very clearly to see who I am. He spells his with one X. Mine is spelled with three X's because, like when I was with your girlfriend last night, she can tell you why I'm hardcore.
Wow.
That's how it's going to be. That's how we're doing in this segment. And again, like we said, you know, incognito is the story of the day. And for those that have just kind of been hearing odds and ends of the story, Marcus, why don't you catch us up to speed at, you know, where this whole thing is at and what's going on in the Miami Dolphins locker room?
Yeah, so in a span of a week, this story has started as something that was pretty innocent and pretty odd when we heard reports about Jonathan Martin leaving the team after an incident involving his teammates, to the point now where we have what sounds like all the full details of the harassment and treatment that he was receiving from one specific teammate, in particular, Richie Incognito. Where to begin on this story, boy? I guess, you know, the big point was a voicemail, or racially charged voicemails that Incognito had been leaving for Jonathan Martin. To say it was harassment would be an understatement based on the audio transcripts. The most interesting dynamic, I think, to come out of this week was not so much the harassment, but it was the perception that Richie Incognito was an honorary black person by his Miami Dolphin teammates, and that he was, according to one Dolphin, he was more blacker than Jonathan Martin, who's biracial. We're talking about a white boy who, on paper, on first look, strikes me nothing as a black man, but you know, he somehow gotten a pass from his teammates, and it just opens up a whole can of worms of bigger issues in terms of race and what's perceived as a black male and et cetera, et cetera. So we can dive in anywhere at this point in the story. And at the very end, we can get back to the statement that his attorney just put out, Jonathan Martin, and he had more evidence of harassment for his client. So we can get back to that later.
All right, so I will step in first and you know, kind of give my two cents on this whole issue. I think there's just a lot to kind of parse through and digest. The first thing that kind of struck me with this is the strange work scenario, the work habitat that an NFL locker room is. You know, on the one hand, I think sports and football in particular is one of the most progressive work environments because it's about merit. It's a meritocracy. It's about whether you can do the job, whether you're red, yellow, black, white, green, purple. If you can do your job, then you are accepted. But it's also this environment where we have these antiquated ideas of what is manhood, or in this case, talking about Jonathan Martin, you know, what is blackness? And, you know, it seems to me that, you know, I hear a lot of former players coming out saying, well, Jonathan Martin should have just talk to his team leaders and found a way to resolve this. Well, how can you do that when Richie Incognito is a team leader? And even worse than that, Joe Philbin, you know, the more things come out, Joe Philbin, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, it seems that he's kind of playing that Colonel Jessup role where, you know, we saw A Few Good Men where Colonel Jessup ordered that code red on Private Santiago. And here it looks like Joe Philbin ordered, you know, Richie Incognito to go and toughen up Jonathan Martin, whatever that means. You know, this is a big dude. This is a guy that made it to the NFL. You drafted him in the second round for a certain reason. I don't see why you feel the need to toughing this kid up, especially with a guy with the history of Richie Incognito going back all the way to the University of Nebraska. So, you know, that's kind of where I come into this story, Mike. But, you know, I'm very interested to see to hear what you have to say about it.
Well, again, an honor of being here with the Kings. It's cool to be in a palace with other Kings because other, you know, lesser Kings can't understand our intelligent minds. But so I am honored to be here. But this whole thing personally just has me a little upset. Because as I was explaining with my wife having this conversation, the NFL has a different set of rules, guys. And whether, you know, people want to admit it or not, you know, that same thing where, you know, women can call other women the B word, but yet you cannot call a woman the B word. In the NFL, you are expected to be tough because they are, let's be honest, maniacs. You have to be some kind of crazy. And I've heard this from every former NFL player, as well as some current NFL players, who say you have to be some kind of crazy to throw your body into another man's body at the speed and force that they do it in. So, for one thing, the NFL rules, this has been happening for years. We saw movies back in the 90s, The Program, and go back all the way back to my favorite, one of my favorites, Rudy. Go back to Friday Night Lights. Being tough in football has always been there. So this whole thing about he should get a pass and or he shouldn't get a pass because it's the NFL. No, he needs to step up and be a man. He's 6'4", 20-some-odd years old, whether he was embarrassed or not, because, you know, there's stories coming out all over the place. Former Dolphins offensive lineman London Murtha, I believe, got a whole entire almost four-page excerpts on his experience with Incognito and Jonathan Martin. So I think this thing goes a lot further. And let me rephrase that. I apologize, if you will, so to speak. It's going too far. It's becoming a bully issue because all of a sudden in this country they say we have to be equal. We all have to be equal this and equal that. So bullies this and bully that. No, this is a case of one man versus another man, and man and man on man. Like the same thing I do with my sons. The same thing happened to me with my uncles and my father. If I run from a problem, there's going to be a problem. So you got to face the problem. And everybody who says, "Oh, you can't stand up to a bully," I just have this question for you. Were you bullied as a kid? Because that's the mentality that someone who was bullied would have to say. Because any true man, especially in the NFL, has to fight back. And I'm not saying what Incognito did was correct because he's completely wrong. And I step back and get on that part of the story later. But as far as manhood in the NFL, it's a completely different ballgame.
Here's where this story is bad for the NFL long term. It's obvious that this is not a good look for the NFL. And a lot of people are looking at this like, oh, the NFL is this big monster that can survive anything. And they might be right. But the NFL has way too many bubbles. And by bubble, I mean like a scandal to where it's not an isolated incident. It's just part of a culture of the NFL, or it's just something the NFL tends to struggle with. We've had the bounty bubble with the Saints. And remember, the Packers were being investigated for the very same thing before the Saints were. And a lot of players around the league have participated in bounties, and it's just very hard to track. So that's something that the NFL is really seeing as a black eye. There's the heart attack bubble that we saw play out with Gary Kubiak and John Fox. Now people are saying it's too dangerous to coach in the NFL. There's a concussion bubble. There's the thug bubble with all these players getting arrested in the offseason. And now we have a bully bubble. And this is something that's not really going to change in the NFL as far as the culture of the NFL. You can only tell these players to change so much to where a player is going to have to be calmer, gentler, nicer, because when the rubber meets the road, whether it's politically correct or not, when a team is on a losing streak or they're getting ready to play a big rival, or when they're hurt or when they're sore and they're injured and they have nothing else to go on, what they fall back to is that quote-unquote toughness. And they feel that they need to man up as perceived by gender roles in order to go there, and that's the type of machismo that dominates an NFL locker room. So when you see something like this, this is something that could play onto these special interest groups, these anti-bullying groups, and this is just another problem the NFL would have to deal with. No one group is going to take the NFL down, but it's so big right now, people are looking for reasons to take it down. And if they continue to have all these scandals, all these special interest groups combined could be the NFL's worst nightmare.
I agree. I think, you know, you've mentioned all the bubbles. I think the one bubble that will pop them is a death during the game. And whenever that does happen, and it's going to happen at some point, I think that's when the league will step back and sort of assess themselves. But, you know, the story will, you know, 6 months from now, we probably won't be talking about Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito. We'll be moving on. So it's just the hot story at the moment. Not that, you know, made to the right or wrong, but it's something that you know, I think it's in part because of the 24/7 news cycle that the media has now, you know, sucked itself into, that we're so hyper focused on this one story.
If I can jump back in and march into Alfred, I agree with a lot of what you guys are saying, but that one part about it's a problem for the NFL. And I know that if this was, let's say, wrestling, for instance, the WWE, this might be bigger news because of all the things they do with campaigns and things like that. But the NFL doesn't do things like that, anti-bully things, because that's completely opposite of what they are. You've been around football locker rooms. You've heard coaches. I just use my own coach, and it's so Chip Kelly says, you know, my motto, big guys beat up little guys. So it's always been that mantra of the NFL. So I think the media in itself, you know, and us just having something to talk about as well, being part of the media, when this goes to Good Morning America and Dateline and things like that, and they're reaching deeper and deeper into the pocket, the only thing good about this is that it's talking about the NFL, because it's still publicity for the NFL. This is going to get swept underneath the rug, and nothing's going to happen to Richie Incognito. He's going to be playing somewhere else next year. And there's certain Dolphin players saying if he gets suspended, then suspend us all. So, and we still haven't talked about the race issue in this in at all.
Yeah, so that's to the one of the
way too loud.
Yeah, before we get to the race issue, let me touch on you know, the issue of whether this is a problem or not for the NFL. I don't think this is a problem in and of itself. I do think, though, that, you know, when, like Alfred said, when you have a litany of these smaller issues that kind of bubble up, and, you know, you realize that who are the people that are kind of in charge of the future of football. And in a lot of cases, especially, you know, we got to say it, especially in African-American households with a lot of single mothers, it's the mamas that's making these judgment calls, whether they're going to let their sons play football or not. And I think, you know, with the concussions, with, you know, this bullying thing, with, you know, the haze and things of that nature, they might be more reticent to let their kid play football than they have been in years past. But I did want to spin this forward, like you said, Mike, to this issue of race and this issue of Richie Incognito being named by a lot of people, I guess, in the locker room and on the offensive line, a quote-unquote honorary black guy, and getting those N-word privileges that, you know, are so tricky and so problematic for our Caucasian brothers and sisters. Because, you know, to me, I understand, you know, I'm not going to be one of those guys that sit up here and say, oh, white people should never, ever say the N-word. Because I got friends that, you know, white friends that can say the N-word around me. But they realize that that only extends, that permission, if you will, only extends to me and not to the greater African-American community as a whole. And I'm thinking, you know, Richie Incognito, he might have had one, two guys on that offensive line. It's like, it's cool, Richie. You can call me a nigga. You can say the N-word anytime you want. But if I'm a wide receiver or a running back or you know, one of the other skill positions, and I hear this big, fat, sloppy dude from Nebraska just throwing around the N-word all willy-nilly, I'm going to feel some type of way about that. So I think it causes problems that don't really need to be there in terms of, you know, you're trying to be on this unified front. You're trying to be a team moving towards the same goal. And as we saw with Riley Cooper, little things like this, you know, they can get you sidetracked.
And I'm glad you said that, Nate, because when it comes to race, I'm sorry, but Richie Incognito has nothing to worry about when it comes to this aspect of the story of him saying the N-word. I'm just being a realist, and Mike and Marcus talked about it, the 24-hour news cycle. We just saw that play out. Riley Cooper, I was hearing people saying he should never play for the Eagles. He should be banned. They should make an example of him because he said the N-word on camera. Guess what? My man had 3 touchdowns this past weekend. Well, what N-word? What are you talking about? Riley Cooper, you Google him. They're going to talk about how he scored 3 touchdowns for your fantasy team if you're in a 16-teamer. So when it comes to that 24-hour news cycle, this will be a non-story a week from now, and I'm completely in agreement with Mike that when a team gets desperate, left guard is a very important position. Richie Incognito should have never, ever been drafted by the NFL, given his history of colleges or problems in college. But he's so talented that he's going to get work. Okay, so the 24-hour news cycle is the definite underlying overtone in this story.
That, speaking of Incognito and that whole video, when that video came out, maybe I'm just jaded or beat down at this point, but I wasn't even moved by that video of him saying the N-word. There was so much stuff that came out this past week that was probably like on the bottom of the list of things that he's been accused of. And especially when you watch it, yeah, you know, it's wrong, whatever. But in the context of what he's saying, I understand. And it not to take away from what Incognito did, but it does say a lot when you have so many teammates coming to his aid. And then you also have to factor in that a lot of teammates were saying that Incognito and Martin were, you know, like best friends. And if that's the case, it makes you wonder if there's maybe something else going on that we don't know about. I'm not going to go down that route, but in a related topic, I think this does set back. You know, we talked about earlier in the season, a couple episodes about, you know, players coming out and whatnot. But, you know, I think we will never see. This has put a setback maybe by years in terms of this treatment. Why would I'm going off on a tangent here. But, you know, why would a guy come out now in the NFL when you know that you have guys who are being bullied just for being quote-unquote soft? So there's a lot to take away from this whole story. And I think we might not never get, you know, the whole 100% true from both sides or both camps. But I would like to hear more from Incognito in terms of his point of view and where he was coming from. And overall, I mean, I hold Incognito responsible, but at the same time, the Dolphins front office and coaching staff is just as responsible for what's going on.
I'm going to start with two of my favorite quotes of all time. Anything, whatever happens in Vegas, except for crabs, because you can't take that back. And avoid the clap, Jimmy Dugan. And I say those things for this. And because to me, this is all prevalent into this matter. Part of the problem, Nate, is how you began. And I'm from the south side of Chicago, Inglewood all day. I knew nothing but black on black crime to the fullest of that being however you want to take it. I moved to the whitest place I could have moved to in Newark, Delaware. Okay, it was completely a culture shock for me. I since then, we all have white friends. We all have black friends. And just to sidetrack or backpedal a little bit with the Riley Cooper thing, it never bothered me in the first place because, A, I don't know the whole contents of what was said to that man that made that man flip off like that to say that in the first place. And then second, oh, well, it ain't like nothing I've never heard before in the first place. Was it wrong? Yeah. Should it have been on tape? Nah, because although it's not fair to you, like Charles Barkley said, I'm not here to be a role model. Unfortunately, you still got to, like the media we're talking about, it's all on you. So for that, he was at fault. Only because of that. Other than that, it didn't bother me. Heck, now I know your true colors. Now, here's my thing. I've had friends that have tried to say the word in front of me. I don't allow it. It's not to be made comfortable because I have a grandmother. I have a grandfather. We all have a grandmother, a grandfather, or somebody that we know that went through that struggle where that word was offensive. I have a wife. I have a mother-in-law who is to this day a Black Panther dress hanging to the floor. You know what I mean? And it's just certain things should never be said. So the fact that his teammates say that, oh, he's more blacker than Martin in the first place, and it's cool to say it. No, it's never cool. It should never be okay. At my daytime job, I'm a bus driver. I don't let the young black men say it to each other, especially in front of their white friends, because that's also the problem. It's become so normal with us saying it that now everybody thinks that it's the hot thing to say. You know what I mean? And so for those matters, the word will always hold offense for me. And I'm not saying I don't use the word, because I'd be lying if I said I don't. But I am also, like Mike Jackson said, I'm a man in a mirror. I'm looking at myself. When I stop seeing it completely, then I can expect the world to stop seeing it. And that's probably never going to happen. But white people, unfortunately, still can't say it. I don't care how close to me as a white friend you are. So blacks have to be held accountable for allowing it. Whites have to still feel like, let's be honest, and I hope I don't disrespect anybody by saying this. If I call my white friends cracker or honky, it's not going to bother them.
No.
Because it didn't hold no beat down, no oppression kind of a demeaning towards them. So, and then just to fast forward and get done with this whole thing with Martin and Incognito, like I said, the things came out. It's a whole full-page letter. If you go to SI.com, you can read it right there, where even the money situation where they say he tried to extort this money from Martin was a thing where the whole offensive linemen were going out to do a trip for the team. Martin reneged at the end, so Incognito's pretty much saying, I'm going to smack your other mother. That's the part I think is funny, because I want to know who's his real mother if he's going to smack his other mother. Okay, that's just hilarious to me. I'm going to use that every time I can get. I'm going to smack your real mother. But, you know, Give me the money you're supposed to pay. And again, there's heard he's laughing. There's heard that he's played the voicemails and he laughed about it. I think this is on a blow up in nobody's face but Martin, because it's all coming on him. He's the one that's not going to have a job in the NFL because, like Alfred said, if and Ari goes to the best himself. How come Mike Vick can come back? Because Mike Vick can throw a ball 80 yards. Sorry, Vince, you can't. That's the difference in this world we live in, unfortunately.
Yeah, Nate, you need to check your white friends in down south, man.
Look, I don't have enough time in the day to check these wonderful Caucasian people down here.
You do it one time, and it's not even a matter of, because they're going to say it. That's why we all laugh at white girls. You're going to say it. You know, that's what we're not our parents. You know what I mean? We're in a different world. We see it. You're going to have internet tough guys. This world is completely different, but you got to still maintain some things. This is why other nationalities outside of African Americans are the only ones that don't really stick together. Say what you want. Only time blacks get together is when we have a Trayvon Martin situation. We hype it up for 2 months and then we go back into our regular lives, because black people, whether I like to say it or not, I hate to say it or not, to be honest with you, only think about each other. And until we start Trayvon thinking about who? The next man. Exactly.
The crabs in a barrel.
Let me pull up this statement here that Jonathan Martin's attorney released.
I don't know who's worse, him or the NFL for allowing this, or it just all this whole just the fact that America once upon a time stood for something. And I'm not saying everything America did was bright. Lord knows I'm not saying that. But as a country, we used to have pride. You know what I mean? You can't even talk about Jesus Christ in school anymore. But yet, you know, I was told as a bus driver, I can't put Christmas decorations or wear Santa Claus hat. Santa has something to do with Jesus. You know what I mean? So, like, this whole world we live in, America that built us to be one way, is trying to change us because, and I always blamed everything God's on MTV. Remember the MTV when Pedro died and had AIDS? Mm-hmm. The world changed from that point on. So I've always blamed MTV for that real world that they showed when Pedro, you know, may he rest in peace, died, and the whole world changed from there. And it's, I don't question nobody. I'm not God. I don't judge. But I'm not afraid to still believe, have my beliefs, and say I believe. Like, I can't be mad at the KKK. I mean, they're not for me. They want to hold me down. But hello, at least they're standing for something. I can say that's more than most Americans.
And if anything in this situation, whether you agree or not, you would have to say that the person that was being the most true to themselves was Richie Incognito. Because this is something, like Albert said, this is a guy that had draft character concerns coming out of college. You know, Tony Dungy put the note on the draft board when the Colts were considering drafting Richie Incognito. He said, DNDC, do not draft character. So, you know, Richie Incognito was just being him. If I have a problem with anybody in this situation, my problem lies more with Joe Philbin and the management. Because, you know, I, much like with the Bounty Gate, I blame the people in charge more so than the players. With this situation, I think if you know something is going on in your locker room, it's up to you as a head coach to get a hold of it. You know, and he says he didn't understand, he didn't know what was going on. To me, that says either A, you're incompetent and you weren't seeing what was going on, or B, even worse, you turned a blind eye to what was going on. So to me, Joe Philbin showed us most of the blame, and I think he should be getting more criticism.
It's above Philbin. It's Jeff Ireland. We're talking about the same guy who asked, I believe it's Dez Bryant, is your mom a prostitute during the draft combine? Like, it starts at the top. It's above Philbin. Philbin is only, what, year two or three there. This has been going on probably for years under Jeff Ireland, who has allowed for this culture to festivate in the locker room. So, you know.
Hey, let's not just say Jeff Ireland and the Dolphins. Let's be honest. This is NFL-wide. This issue has pit outsiders versus insiders. We're hearing people stick up for Richie Incognito. There were words like code red being used to describe a person at work going to his boss and saying, I can't take this anymore. If you get bullied, if somebody acts like Richie Incognito did at my 9-to-5, I could easily go to a supervisor and nobody would think twice. That's what you do. It's common sense, but not in the NFL. Right. Because, again, the culture is for people to act the way they're acting. There's a different code that they go by. And, you know, everybody's talking about Jeff Ireland and the Dolphins organization and the leadership, but let's be honest, this is just what's getting out. I'm sure this is league-wide.
And it has been going on for years. Like I said, we've had all kind of movies to detail that in full. That's why That's why I don't think the NFL is in much trouble, because it's always happened. And it always will happen. And it will never stop happening. That's what's made the NFL famous. People forget that. The NFL has made all this money off of hard hits, off of all these guys. We've heard the stories. We know what's going on. And that they try to digress on those kind of on those things. And this is something that's never going to happen because these guys are crazy.
Here's the statement from David Cornwell, Martin's attorney. Jonathan endured harassment that went far beyond the traditional locker room hazing, Cornwell said. For the entire season and a half that he was with the Dolphins, he attempted to befriend the same teammates who subjected him to the abuse with the hope that doing so would end the harassment. This is a textbook reaction of victims of bullying. Despite these efforts, the taunting continued. Beyond the well-publicized voicemail with its racial epithet, Jonathan endured a malicious physical attack on him by a teammate and daily vulgar comments such as the quote at the bottom, "These facts are not in dispute." And the quote at the bottom was from a unnamed teammate who said this to Jonathan Martin. "We are going to run train on your sister. She loves me. I am going to fuck her without a condom and come in her cunt."
Oh my God.
Wow.
That escalated quickly.
Yeah, you went from A to Z.
Eventually, Jonathan made a difficult choice. Despite his love for football, Jonathan left the Dolphins. Jonathan looks forward to getting back to playing football. In the meantime, he will cooperate fully with the NFL investigation. So,
wow.
You know, I'm on the four letter right now, and under Sports Nation, they have the what do you think about Dolphins general manager Jeff Ireland saying Jonathan Martin should have physically confronted Richie Incognito? And I voted in what I agreed in what he said. And 50-50, this country is split between 100 and almost 28,000 people voting. Literally 50-50. If you see the map, you would think you were watching the presidential election, because it seems like all the Democratic states have said disagree with that, and all the red states have said agree. And that's really funny to me, because I'm in a blue state, but my state voted red on this that I'm living in. I think that's funny. So I'm sorry.
And that's the thing. It's like I'm hearing all these dudes say, you know, what they would have done. But and I know what I would have probably done. But until you're in that situation, until you're in those shoes, when you're dealing with money and you're dealing with a culture that, you know, I played sports in high school and college, but I never made it to the NFL level. So I don't know, you know, what type of atmosphere that is. And it's like every effect, every action has an effect, excuse me. And it's like if he decides to punch Incognito in the face, yeah, he might get propped up by some of the dudes in the locker room, but that may cause repercussions from the coaching staff. You know, it's like, who does he listen to? Who does he serve? And so I think Martin should have done something, but I'm not sure if you know.
So do you really believe that? Do you really believe
that?
You
know, also, whether Richie Incognito was a more important piece to that offensive line than Jonathan Martin.
But fights happen in football camps all the time. Practice, warm-ups, that's what happens. They fight all the time. So this would have been nothing more than a fight, hockey fights. I know it's a different kind of scenario, but you fight in hockey and knock somebody out, they're drinking a beer later that night. I mean, that's the sport. That's the part I think is getting overlooked here, is that this is the norm.
Yeah, I understand that. I think it's different, though, if Martin is a fifth or sixth-year player instead of a second-year player, because the level of prestige, the level of pull in that locker room is vastly different between this dude that's barely done being a rookie and Richie Incognito.
You said it. Go ahead, Marcus. I was just going to say real quick. Mike said it himself when he said in hockey they get in a fight and they have a beer later. So that's why I struggle with this, is because I think from an NFL standpoint, if he would have engaged and gotten into a fight, maybe that respect level would have been there and they would have just had a beer later and this thing would have blown over as opposed to what it degenerated into.
Yeah,
I mean, if they fought, it wouldn't have gotten out. And just like, you know, we didn't know about this until today, this whole Incognito story about how he sexually harassed, allegedly, a golf course worker. The Dolphins knew about it. They made sure they covered that up until now. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on that wouldn't have impacted Martin or his playing time, especially in that shitty offensive line he would have played. So yeah, I mean, I can't say what I would have done in his shoes, because I'm not the person who is a fighter. I'm not going to be that person and say, oh, I would have fought, because I don't know. I'm not in a situation. I didn't face that, you know, situation from Incognito. So it's just a bad situation all around. And unfortunately, I doubt Jonathan Martin plays in the NFL ever again. And it wouldn't surprise me if Incognito plays next season.
Yeah, and that's where I wanted to kind of take this to kind of wrap things up. First of all, I do think, though, that an interesting thing might be, we've noticed, whether it's with the tobacco industry or, you know, any type of industry, if you get one whistleblower or one person that comes out that's disgruntled, we saw it with Tiger Woods. All it took was one trifling skeezer to come out, and then the floodgates were open. So it'd be interesting to see if anybody else in the Dolphins organization, even people that, you know, maybe it's like a janitor or maybe it's like one of the secretaries, they come out with allegations of harassment. But what I did want to ask everybody is, Marcus kind of touched on it, three things. What's next for Martin? What's next for Incognito? And what, if anything, this means for the NFL? And we'll start with Mike.
I think Martin's done in the league, and I think Incognito will be back with his team, if not later this year.
Back with the Dolphins.
Back with the Dolphins.
Okay, Big Nasty.
I think as a PR move, a team perceived as a good organization, maybe the Patriots, takes Martin in and rebuilds him because he is a good kid. He went to Stanford, got a good head on his shoulders. And Richie Incognito, the next time somebody gets desperate, he'll be in the NFL.
Okay, I'm going to say Martin, he's done obviously for the year. I think, like Alfred said, somebody might take a flyer on him next year. Maybe Harbaugh will kind of show some love to the Stanford Nation and get a kid to try out. But I thought Incognito, I don't know if I'm going to be back this year with the Dolphins. I think that may be a little bit too soon. The fire's still a little bit too hot. But I do think somebody's going to get his dude a shot next year. Like Richie Incognito, for all of the personal attributes and the character issues that he may have, he has that quality of being nasty. No disrespect to you, Big Nasty, but he has that quality that offensive line coaches like. You know, he can get in there, he can be gritty, he can be dirty, he can walk up to the line and sometimes go past that line if necessary. So Incognito's going to get another job. And
I think I'm on my Eagles.
Yeah. And the Eagles can use all the help they can get.
Some weird feedback going on your end. Oh, now my end, too.
We're all echoing.
Yeah, we're all echoing. I think four black men talking about sports is enough for the internet. Somebody trying to shut us down?
They put a microphone in my house.
You know what I'm saying? Roger Goodell is like, we gotta keep these N-words quiet. So before things break down too much, we definitely want to give a big shout out to our brother Mike Knox for stopping by. Mike, can you let the people know where they can find you as well as all of the shows that you guys produce over there?
Hashtag Mr. Blog Talk Radio. But you can visit the website, BDSIRnetwork.com, get a list of all the shows running from Monday through Sunday, as well as every day of the week. We are on your iTunes, we're in your Stitcher, you name it, we're there. The app is coming soon, so just want to thank everybody out there, and most importantly, thank the Kings for having me on.
No doubt. You got an open invitation anytime you want to hop back on, brother.
I appreciate it. Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Mike Knox, like I told you. Not just your girlfriend's girlfriend, but your girlfriend's mom knows I'm hardcore, too. That's why I spoke with three X's. I'm just saying. Axer.
Oh, man. And on that note, again, big shout-out to Mike Knox. And that was We Got Issues. I'm sure this story will not be dying down anytime soon. But that's all we're going to talk about for tonight. So we'll be back with more Kings of Sport after the break.
If I'm a slave, I'm a slave to the rhythm, to E-R-A-S-E, the racism.
The ink is black, the page is white. Together we learn how to read and write. Some people are black, there's people that's white. Let's stop racism and let's unite.
To the black and white, the red and the yellow, to all the nationalities, I like to say hello. And I hope they stop racism, and it's coming from our hearts. Me, Coogee Rap, Polo, Big Daddy Kane, Cool V, And of course, the diabolical and Bismarcky. I hope you stop racism. Peace.
And now it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, Marcus, Nate, Nasty. This is your favorite show, the most dangerous podcast in the world. Speaking of dangerous, guys, I still, 10 weeks into this season, have more wins than both of you combined. I know you don't feel too good about that, but in order to cheer you up, Nate, I know there's something that you must have felt good about while it was a story and while it seemed to be true, in that Wrestling Guy and Smashing Pumpkins frontman Billy Corgan was discussed as a surefire candidate to purchase TNA. Ever since it's degenerated, we've heard Toby Keith, we've heard all kinds of names. So Nate, tell me, who's going to buy TNA? Is it even for sale?
Oh, all I got to say is, despite all my rage, I'm still just a rat in a cage, Brother Nasty. And I think this is crazy because it just shows you how a story can grow and progress and with these rumors out there. And I am of the belief that there were actual talks with Billy Corgan and people in TNA. We know he's been friendly with Dixie Carter and those people for years. I don't know how serious it was. I think it would have been a good idea. I mean, he was a Resistance Pro up in Chicago that I've been seeing rave reviews about. So it would have been interesting to see his take on TNA. I guess there was also a report out that Jeff Jarrett and Toby Keith had been trying to get something together. And Toby Keith, who had appeared in TNA back in the early days and at the height of Toby Keith-a-mania, when he was telling all those other countries he was going to put a boot in their ass for America. But I think that all of this smoke and mirrors and all of this kind of confusion just leads me to believe that it's not going to be too long before this company is sold. I don't think you can stay in a state of flux like this and expect to thrive or even survive. You know, I think, you know, Marcus may have a better idea of this than me in terms of, you know, companies going through takeover rumors or states of flux with some of his previous employers.
Viacom, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, companies kind of changing hands and kind of the way that news affects the morale of the workers. But I don't see them being able to sustain this, the Carters, that is, being able to sustain this company in its current state for too much longer, especially now that all these rumors are starting to come out.
And rumors is the key word. I mean, God forbid, you know, someone on the internet does reporting or makes phone calls or anything halfway legitimate when it comes to wrestling news. So, you know, sorry to get your hopes up about Billy Corgan there, Nate. Looks like he's not going to be the Nets owner.
And well, see, that's the thing really, in terms of wrestling, because it's like there are rumors, but there's also, you know, there the line between, you know, this is a business of works, and the line between a work and a shoot is very thin. You know, you have people like Dave Meltzer that were even picking up on the story, and it's like, I think there was something there, but I don't know how far along it was, where maybe Billy was 25% interested or 85% interested, but I don't think that this was something that somebody just made up out of the blue.
If we wanted to start a rumor right now on this show, we could start a rumor and the dirt sheets would pick it up. I'm telling you.
And you know what? He's right, because Examiner.com, all due respect to them, they're not a breaking news site, but they ran with this story of Hulk Hogan reportedly coming back to WWE. And again, we took it with a grain of salt because we know them not to be traditionally a breaking news site. Nothing wrong with that, but that's just not their forte. And that ended up being a false rumor, but it got a lot of attention. And especially if you see how WWE has shown Hulk Hogan all over their TV, you would see why. And also with TNA, you guys are right. You don't know what's working, what's not. A lot of this looks like posturing. Even when I see a memo from Janice Carter saying, I couldn't be any happier to be part of TNA, we're not selling the company, I look at that as posturing. Like, they're putting the squeeze on whatever candidate in the final hour could possibly buy TNA, and then we're going to hear 2 weeks later that they purchased it. So I really don't know what to believe.
I completely see this. I don't know when in terms of the timetable, but I definitely think that this is posturing, like you said, Alfred, in terms of, you know, we don't know who are the candidates that, that are out there looking to purchase TNA. Whether it's, you know, Bischoff and somebody that he's got, or Jared and an investor that he's got. But I do think there's an element of playing these sides against each other, and the more names that you can throw into the hat, the more interest you can gin up, whether it's a Billy Corgan or whether it's a Toby Keith or somebody like that, it just helps the Carter's asking price in essence.
And the keyword is we don't know anything. So at this point, I just want the story to either go away for good and TNA not to be sold, or for it to be sold tomorrow so we can move on and criticize the new owners and just go from there. Because at this point, this whole back and forth between, oh, this person's interested, this person's getting close, oh, they're not close, it's just like, come on, really?
Right, and the thing is, let's be honest, TNA isn't in the greatest shape right now. And the fact that they could be sold has a lot of people excited, depending on who buys it. But then again, it could be sold to somebody who doesn't want to be in the wrestling business. So, Nate, I'll turn it over to you as to, would you rather see TNA just stay the ship and Janice Carter was right and it's not being sold, and I don't know what kind of future you guys would have under that umbrella, or would you be more encouraged to see it be sold if you didn't know who the buyer was going to be?
Well, as a fan and as somebody who has put in an application to work for TNA, full disclosure, I want them checks. I wouldn't care who them checks came from, but I think that for the best interest of the company and for the workers in particular, I think that a change in ownership needs to happen. And whether it's, you know, like we talked about last week, whether it's Universal or whether it's Spike or whether it's Jared and an investor, you know, I think uncertainty is the worst thing, because you got people that, you know, whether it's the workers, whether it's the ring crew, whether it's the announcers, you know, the production staff, you got people that have their lives kind of in limbo and in a state of flux. And I think it would be best for all parties considered, like Marcus said, to for either the Carters to come out and say, hey, we're committed to this company and we're going to redouble our efforts in a sense and really get behind TNA, or we're going to sell it, because uncertainty, I think, is the worst thing for all parties involved.
Do we even know for sure they're up for sale in the first place?
When
did this even start? Because if we're just going based on, you know, TNA shit in the bed, and in terms of ratings, the numbers have been the same all year. The only fallback.
Have been the same for like the last decade. If we're being real with it.
I mean, the only red flag would be moving off the road. But you know, if the numbers are true, it just financially didn't make sense for them to continue doing house shows and live shows away from Orlando when you're spending so much money. So if we're basing all this talk on a sale based on a move off the road back to Orlando, it just seems like a stretch to me. Yeah, we had some layoffs along the way, but really, the guys that they've been letting go in terms of talent, have we missed them at all? Have we missed Hulk Hogan on our television screens? No. I wish Anderson didn't come back. Who else has been let go? SoCal Val? Are we missing SoCal?
Mickey James is a big loss, I think.
A big loss out of, what, six? So now they're down to four? Like, come on. I would like to see just more, you know, concrete proof. And sadly, the most concrete proof we've gotten is from Janice Carter, from this memo that says they're not for sale. So I don't know.
And it's not just all speculation. This started with the authority in wrestling journalism, as they say. Dave Meltzer
went on his radio show,
and he said with 100% certainty, which he never says, like Marcus just said, he's always very skittish about his sources. Well, I don't know for sure, but he said, quote, it's 100% true. He said, no matter what you hear about this, it's 100% true. TNA is for sale. So between these two sources, I really don't know who to believe. And that's where we've gone from this. Now, Nate talked about change, and Marcus did mention an individual who has been part of one of the biggest changes for TNA in 2013. That's Hulk Hogan, who, as it stands, has departed from TNA. Maybe he'll come back, maybe he won't. But if you've been watching WWE Raw, Hulk Hogan this past week was all over the programming. Some people say don't look into it much. Joey Styles has said in interviews, he's the internet guy for WWE. Manswwe.com says, we just do it to get traffic to WWE.com. I don't believe it. It's WrestleMania 30 season. Marcus, is Hulk Hogan coming back?
I think she is. And I think we've talked about this privately, but I think if Hogan doesn't re-sign by the first Impact taping in Orlando in November, I can definitely see him coming back. He won't wrestle. He'll just come back as a legend, quote-unquote, sort of like Ric Flair should have been if he wasn't a drunk, allegedly. So, yeah, I can see Hogan coming back just for, you know, Warrior needs someone to have him introduced into the Hall of Fame if it gets to that point. You can find a million things to do with Hulk Hogan, but the one thing I don't want to see Hulk Hogan is him wrestling in the ring. Please, for the love of God, not even for the Royal Rumble, please no. No, no,
yeah,
no.
And before I go to you, Nate, why would you sign Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 30 season if he's not going to wrestle? I'm with you, Marcus. I don't want to see it. From a sense, he's the only big wrestler who I still have never seen live, and I would like to just see that. It wouldn't be in ideal shape or whatnot, but I want to say I saw him. But why are you coming to WWE during WrestleMania 30 season if you're not going to wrestle? What else is he going to possibly do? He's been inducted in the Hall of Fame. Him and Warrior have beef, so they're not going to want to spend any time near each other. I don't know if time will heal that wound. But, Nate, it seems like it's a done deal. So is he coming back?
I think so. I mean, granted, I might be speaking selfishly as a TNA fan. I definitely don't want to see him coming back. But I think it makes the most sense. I mean, if Hogan is going to ever come back, at least in a limited capacity, it makes sense to do it at WrestleMania 30. You know, he's been all over the product in one way, shape, or form, whether it's the video game or whether it's, you know, the poll that they did at that pay-per-view or, you know, the stuff that's been up on the website. And you can't tell the history and the story of WrestleMania without Hulk Hogan. And as big of an ego as he has, he's always had a decent relationship with Vince for the most part. You know, they've had their ups and downs. They've had their beef. But at the end of the day, they've been able to work things out. And I think we'll see Hulk Hogan not only coming back as a legend, but I think you're going to see him in that Royal Rumble, brother.
They're not.
How is he going to take a bump over the top rope? And they have to do something like have money heel attack him.
Top rope when you win the Rumble, brother?
No.
What you going to do, Big Nasty?
Yeah, you really are working for TNA, aren't you? That would really put TNA on the map.
Listen, he's not going to wrestle. If they're not going to let Lawler wrestle because of age and health reasons, he's not going to let Hogan wrestle. Come on. But tell me, Alfred, if you're at the Superdome and if you heard Hogan's music come out, tell me you wouldn't pop, even if he just came out and, you know, just did the whole ear thing and went back down the aisle.
That would be the big draw for me to go to the Superdome. I would pop like a little child. I would be a 3-year-old again if I heard.
There you go.
I'm getting chills just thinking about it right now, Marcus.
So I mean, that's he can take that Shawn Michaels type of role where he just pops on TV now and then, and you know, I don't think you want to get physical with him because you run the risk of him hurting himself. But yeah, I'm sure he could deliver a boot to someone. But in terms of him wrestling a match against someone like a John Cena or something like that, no, that's not gonna happen. Please.
Well, in Hulk Hogan's most recent competitive contest, he lost an arm wrestling match to Toronto Mayor Rob Ford. But we're going to tell you why Rob Ford was a big loser this past weekend. Segment 4 is on the way.
This big dog will fight when you rattle his cage. And you'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And a Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be hell. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you. Courtesy of the red, white, and blue. Oh, of the red, white, and blue.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, Be sure to follow us on Twitter at KOS underscore POD. That's CosPod on Twitter. Let's go.
Up in lights, he just wants to be heard, whether it's the beat of the mic, he feels so.
Thank you, Your Honor. We're going live right now to City Hall, where the mayor is speaking. Let's listen in.
You asked me a couple of questions, and what were those questions?
Do you smoke crack cocaine?
Exactly. Yes, I have smoked crack cocaine.
When,
but
sir?
No, do I? Am I an addict? No.
When have you
have I tried it? Probably in one of my drunken stupors.
Zingo!
And we are back on the Kings of Sport, powered by Place to Be Nation, ready to close up shop for another week, much like your favorite neighborhood Blockbuster, RIP. But unlike Blockbuster, we ain't going nowhere. We're just going to wrap things up, and we're going to do it the way we do each and every week with segment four. But before we get there, Marcus, I don't know about you, but I believe in second chances. I believe in redemption. In the spirit of redemption, we're going to send this next piece of business over to our brother, Alfred Big Nasty Cunningham. And why don't you tell the people about the good folks over at Audible.com?
Well, thank you, Nate. Audible.com is a premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 100,000 titles to choose from in every genre: thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere, and for you, the listeners of the Kings of Sport podcast. Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. And let me personally recommend some of these great titles that you may be familiar with. How about The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien? What do you think about that? The Witness by Nora Roberts. We're talking enough racism on this show today. You might be in the mood for The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, a history of Nazi Germany, abridged by William L. Shire. And my personal favorite, for those of you who can't get enough of Lex Luger, and who can, right now as I speak, there is a Lex Luger biography called Wrestling with the Devil on Audible.com. Pick that up, listen to it, and to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Again, that's audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport for your free audiobook. That's a walk-off, Brother Nate. Back to you.
Damn. That was actually pretty good, Alfred.
Good job, Alfred.
I don't know about you, Marcus, but I was kind of hoping he was going to screw it up again.
I know you were.
No, I didn't want to laugh again like that, so I was glad he got through it.
It was another good laugh. We would have laughed and, you know, worked a pectoral and ab muscles after having a nice hearty dinner. It would have been a good exercise.
Well, I thank you, and the good people at Audible.com thank you. So good work.
I thank them.
Well, now let's transition from that highlight to a lowlight, and that is the mayor of Toronto, the great Rob Ford. And if you will allow me, brothers, before we get into segment four, to preface this topic with a paraphrasal, if you will, of the lyrics from the great Jay-Z, because yes, we're about to clap for a mayor with his ripping ass. We're going to blow a stack for a mayor with his trapping ass. Talking about Rob Ford. And for those out there that may not keep up with the news and the late night comedy shows or live outside of Toronto, the T-Dot, as it is known, Brother Marcus, why don't you let the people know what is going on with the most exciting mayor since Marion Barry?
Yes, the Canadian Marion Barry. Mr. Rob Ford himself finally came clean about his crack cocaine dabble, if you want to call it that. Doctor had video of Rob Ford over the summer of him smoking crack cocaine, what appeared to be crack cocaine. Rob Ford denied it, didn't address it, but finally he decided to come clean this week. First on his weekly radio show, which I need to start listening to. I've been in Toronto one time, but I am now fascinated by all things Rob Ford. So I will be listening on Sundays to his weekly radio show. But on the radio show, he apologized for quote-unquote making mistakes. And he basically said he's going to run for mayor in 2014 for re-election. 2 days later, though, he came all the way clean and admitted to have smoking crack cocaine. His quote, "Yes, I have smoked crack cocaine, but am I an addict? No. Have I tried it? Probably one of my drunken stupors. Probably approximately about a year ago." So,
key word right there, Marcus. Key word, one of my drunken stupors.
Yes, one of.
Because they're all on YouTube.
Another drunken stupor came out today where it wasn't just alcohol he was on this video. He seemed to have, like, the Jim Neidhart shakes going on. And he was threatening to kill a dude. I lost track. I was just blown away by this man who was gyrating and dancing around and clearly upset at someone and threatening bodily harm as the mayor of Toronto. So it's been quite the week for Rob Ford, and a part of me thinks he might actually win re-election in Toronto for mayor. I mean, just for the comedy aspect alone, a lot of funny people in Toronto. They like the stand-up. They like the comedy. Why wouldn't you re-elect this man just for shits and diddles?
And this story has been the gift that keeps on giving. One of my favorite aspects of it is it was a radio show, AM 640 in Toronto, and a caller named Ian called into the show to defend Mayor Rob Ford and said things like, "Well, you've never been filmed at your job," and this, that, and the other. And the host ended up asking Ian, "Is this Mayor Rob Ford?" And immediately the phone hung up. So now forensic experts have been analyzing this phone call. They've looked at the patterns of how he spoke. Some are saying it was. Some are saying with like 85% confidence that they think it was Rob Ford. Some say no. I want to believe that it was Rob Ford because that just makes it even more hilarious. And if you're a mayor, the only way you're really going to get that much press is if you're in a scandal or if you're mayor of a big city. And Rob Ford does both.
Yeah, and I think anytime you got your mayor sounding like Lil Wayne, "I'm on that good stuff and alcohol. I got some down chicks I can call." Like, I'm thinking that's the next shoe to drop. I was talking with John Pollock earlier tonight on Reviewing Impact with our good friends over at the Fight Network, and we were talking about the Rob Ford story, and he was like, "The next thing I'm waiting for is there's got to be a hooker involved. We got coke, we got alcohol, we got weed. Gangsters.
Yeah.
There's got to be a hooker somewhere in this story," and I'm thinking that's the next shoe to drop here with Rob Ford.
I don't know if Rob Ford is married or not, but I'm sure that wouldn't stop him from acquiring the services of... he's married with two kids, so maybe, maybe not.
Yeah, I think that's the only thing worse than him being married is that the fact that he has two kids, but... You know, I guess that makes him more of a political figure that he now has his family to fall back on, and they won't be a backdrop for his assumed alleged recovery. I don't really see this hurting him. I think they look at Rob Ford as the party guy. He looks like a normal type, everyday couch potato dude. That's the type of built-in appeal he has. And him getting in trouble, crack cocaine is pretty heavy, but this might help his brand in the long run.
And speaking of brands, to kind of just tie this into sports and entertainment and ratchetness even further. Did you guys see who offered an intervention for Rob Ford earlier today?
I did not know.
An ex-wrestler was told to leave City Hall in Toronto after he offered an intervention for Rob Ford. And let's just say this man is no stranger to allegations and accusations. And I'm talking about one Ed Leslie, a.k.a. Brutus, the Barber Beefcake.
The booty man.
Yes, he was outside of the office apparently with a pair of clippers, obviously, and an unidentified submarine sandwich. So we don't know if it was a meatball sub or a cold-cut hoagie. But Brutus was out there with the scissors and the hoagie trying to have an intervention for Rob Ford.
Now, was he really, because if he got escorted out, did he really have scissors? or because if he did, that would be a threat. You know, you don't want a crazy person with scissors out there.
So Brutus cut the best promo of his life, and he was like, the news people were asking him what was he doing there, and he said, "The mayor needs an intervention, so I'm going to be his angel of mercy. Maybe if he gets his body right, he'll be able to get his mind right." Yeah.
You know who showed up the day before, right?
No.
Iron Sheik.
He challenged him, though. Iron Sheik was on the other side of the page.
He went to arm wrestle, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Ford is the Intercontinental Arm Wrestling Champion after defeating Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, the guy's a tough guy. He's a legit badass. That's why, you know, you expect this type of stuff. You expect scandals from these badasses. They just recover from this type of scandal. And I'm telling you right now, this is going to get him, this is going to make him president.
You know who's missing, though?
Can't be president in Canada, by the way.
Yeah,
they don't have presidents in Canada.
He'll sneak into the United States and he'll somehow infiltrate the system and become president, even though he's not a United States citizen. He'll do it.
Just like Obama. I'm kidding, folks. Kidding.
Wow.
Kidding.
Light skin on light skin violence.
Well, I mean, look. Let's look at the cast of characters that are surrounding it and coagulating around Rob Ford. You got Hulk Hogan. You got the Iron Sheik. You got Brutus the Barber, Booty Man, Beefcake. I'm thinking the one man left to complete this stable is one Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Look it. Survivor Series is just around the corner.
He's like, I came here to chew bubblegum and smoke crack, and I'm all out of bubblegum.
By the elimination way, tag right there.
You mentioned Rob Ford. His approval ratings are up since all of this has gone down.
Of course.
So,
if Rob Ford is like a 6'4", good-looking, strapping individual, and he falls upon this type of scandal, they'll say he's a phony, because that is not the type of scandal we'd expect from our handsome American or Toronto or natives, the all-American, all-Canadian person.
Mind, by the way.
Exactly. But Rob Ford looks like the guy you want to have a beer with. That's his whole appeal. So it's like John Daly. People always are going to love John Daly, no matter what type of scandal he gets in. And it's because of how he looks and what we would expect from somebody who looks like that.
And speaking of his physical appearance, I tend to believe Rob when he says he's not a crackhead. He just dabbles in a crack, because I've never seen a crackhead, over two bills.
Well,
I mean, I've seen plenty of potheads that would tip the scale, but not crackheads.
That's a good point.
Okay, so let's see. We've kind of established a cocaine hall of fame, a ring of honor here, if you will, on the Kings of Sport. Does Rob Ford get into the cocaine/crack ring of honor with his recent troubles?
Yes.
He has to.
Is he bigger than the crackhead lawyer? That's the question, though.
Yes.
He is, because the crackhead lawyer is just a crackhead lawyer. Who is the crackhead lawyer?
Yeah. He's running a city.
I think Rob Ford goes to the top of the list. You think he gets outgunned by Lamar Odom? I don't think so.
No. Lamar's just a junkie.
Yeah.
An unemployed junkie. We're talking about a guy who's running a major North American city.
And this could be an elaborate ploy to get his approval ratings up. And if it is, it's working.
An elaborate ploy.
It could be a body double.
You're going to be that guy, Alfred.
It could be a body double. We don't know for 110% that was him. Maybe it was a body double, and he's corroborated with the cops in concocting a story that, yes, that was me who was smoking crack. I'm sorry. And now his approval ratings are up. What do you know?
Bit of a stretch, but sure.
It's a bit of a stretch. Well, you know. I mean, after that great audible read, I'll let you have that, Alfred.
Thank you.
But I will say that Rob Ford, to his credit, has handled this. He hasn't handled it greatly, but he's handled it better than Marion Barry did with the bitch set me up. Like, I will give Rob Ford the edge over Marion Barry when it comes to all-time great crack-smoking mayors. But Marion did get reelected. Do you think, and this is the key question, do you think Rob Ford gets reelected?
Yes.
No, I know he does.
October 27, 2014, that is election day. He gets reelected.
How soon can I get a Canadian citizenship? And if I did in that period of time,
You're asking the wrong guy about getting a quick Canadian citizenship.
You're asking a guy who got booted out of Canada, so he might not be the guy to talk to. Do the opposite of me.
Just tell me your story and I'll do everything you didn't do.
Exactly. Do what I did and just do the opposite. But yeah, I think he's going to get reelected. I think, I was watching some of the commentators from north of the border, and they were basically saying that he's just kind of a figurehead at this point because of the way that their government is set up. You know, it's kind of an equal balance. I know Marcus is a big Simpsons head. You remember that episode of The Simpsons where Mr. Burns went to the doctor? And they said he had a so great amount of toxins in his body that they all canceled each other out.
Oh, yeah.
And they kept him alive. Yeah, I think that's what it's like with Rob Ford. Like, even though he's kind of a bumbling idiot, he's a harmless idiot when it comes to legislation. So I think Ford will get a reelection, especially now. I think he's going to get that hood vote. You know, he's got a street cred now.
The Scarborough vote. He'll get that. he's at 11 months now to clean up his image. I mean, the election's not until next October, so he's had all year to turn this around and do Canadian celebrity rehab or whatever they have in Canada to get his image back to where it was before. So he'll be fine.
And then, and also in 11 months, we'll get Vice Mayor Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
And he could be running against the Iron Sheik.
And that gives a whole new meaning to the term cutting and strutting. So, good luck to Rob Ford, and thank you to our neighbors to the north for providing us with so much entertainment. Our elections this year were kind of boring, and it's good to have these outsized political figures. My only thing is I wish Joe Rogan would have gone up there to ask Rob Ford about his indiscretions, just so he could have been like, let me tell you something about myself, Joe Rogan. I smoke rocks. but I think that's a good place to end it. We always like to end on a good crack story. I think if anybody's listened to all 35 episodes of the Kings of Sport to this point, they know our themes are sports, wrestling, race, and cocaine.
In that order.
Yeah, in that order. Those seem to be the overriding themes of the show. So if you're a biracial sports fanatic who likes wrestling and likes crack, this is the show for you.
There needs to be a crack segment on the show. We just need to dedicate an entire segment to the hottest crack stories in sports and entertainment.
We call it What's Cracking?
We can get it sponsored by like a VCR for $2.
I'm scared for next week.
And this is Marcus usually isn't a part of these crack segments. He's the one who keeps us in line.
And I'll be gone next week.
Now Marcus is getting into it. Yeah, yes. I'm not glad Marcus is gone, but the crack is gotta replace Marcus. The only thing that can replace Marcus is crack.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but sure.
It's a great thing.
I was gonna say something, but sometimes it's best to just let Alfred's statements just kind of stand on their own. So that's where we're going to leave it this week. Again, it was another great show. We had a lot of great discussion. Again, big shout out to Mike Knox with 3X's from the BDSIR Network. You can check out all of his great shows. Follow him on Twitter. Follow him on Facebook. Big shout out to Place to Be Nation. Shout out to Audible, audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport, and also Podcast Land. If you are listening right now or tomorrow or the day after, go to Podcast Land and put in a vote for the Kings of Sport as the podcast of the month, especially all you crackheads out there listening to this at 3 in the morning. Who else brings you cracky tales? We got you. So, Marcus Vandenberg, let the people know where they can find you, where they can follow your work, and where they can leave suggestions for the Kings of Sport podcast.
You can find me on Twitter at Marco Will, M-A-R-C-O-W-I-L-L, and I will probably not be on the show next week, question mark, but we'll let you know.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. I was talking with Dennis Black and Asian about next week, but now I might have to put that off because I do want the meeting of the light skin world. This would be the biggest light skin summit since Christopher Williams sat down with Albie Shore. No, I want to make that happen. So we'll figure out next week, and we'll let you guys know on Facebook and Twitter. Big Nasty, where can the people follow you at?
Follow me on Twitter at This Is Nasty. Go on Bleach Report, read the articles, watch the videos, watch WWWTF, which is my show, and then watch Raw Review. That's your show. We had a very successful debut episode. Keep watching. Keep hashtagging Raw Review and talking to me. You might make it on the show. And the Nasty Network is growing by the second.
They give you another show?
You know, they give a brother another show. They just got to keep the brother working, you know?
They give you another show, which is based on, I assume, user feedback, and you're able to say the things that the people say about you?
Yes. Air? I'm able to exploit the loving praise I get universally from all of my readers and listeners.
I will say, though, like we've said it before, but you're a tweener because your articles are getting heel heat, but your videos are getting babyface heat.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, you're
the Ken Anderson Bleacher Report.
I think both get tweener heat, to be honest, when it comes to the nooks and crannies, to where it's they either hate me or they love me. But what I like about it, and I will take any type of criticism and use it maybe constructively. I'm not going to take it personally. But I like that the same people come back and say how much they hate me. I hate Big Nasty. I'm not watching you until next week.
maybe they are correct, too. Allegedly. You can follow me at N8, M-O-Z-A-I-K, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow all of us at KOS_POD, CosPod on Twitter. And that's going to do it for another week. Again, big shout out to Mike Knox for stopping by. And I guess that's going to do it for this week. So we'll see if Marcus joins us next week. But on the bad side, we might be losing Marcus for a week. But on the good side, if Marcus isn't here, Alfred, I think we should do a whole show with nothing but Cracky Tags.
We're doing it. We're doing a spinoff right now.
What's cracking with Nate now?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham, for Marcus Money Vandenberg, I am the Godfather named Milton. Rest in peace, Blockbuster. Be kind, please rewind, because you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-D-D-Y, that's ass. Attack like I just left.